Okay, the committee will come to order. We have lots to talk about today, and we're going to start with 2082, the gas tax issue, and when we get some amendments back on the 3345, we'll interrupt the gas tax discussion and take care of that bill, and then we'll get back to gas and trucks. So, open a work session on House Bill 2082. Dick, do you want to explain where we are and what we've got before us today?
We kind of did a review the other day, Mr. Chair, of what's in 2082. Went through the bill. And in a number of areas I've pointed out some concerns. And we have we also looked at the A-11 amendments the other day proposed by the cities and counties. And we have a redraft of that in the A-15 amendments.
Okay.
They had, intentionally, or for whatever reason, changed the distribution rate that would apply to current revenues, which was not their intent. So all that the A-15 amendments do is to eliminate the first part of the A-11, which changed the distribution shares.
Do the 15s also have the fast-growing or the high-growth counties portion in there?
Yes.
Okay.
In Section 15, they added Section 15, which adds up to $3 million per year for Eastern Oregon counties, which have experienced decreases in federal forest fees, which are used for the road fund.
There's another rural thing. Okay, well, okay. Just when we ask for things in the urban area, I just want you to remember that.
In these amendments, that increase is sunsetted on July 1 of 2007. So it would continue for 6.5 years.
Okay.
In Section 17, then, what you have in distribution under current law is a special county allotment and a special city allotment. For the county allotment, you take $500,000 out of what would be allocated to the counties and put it into the special allotment. And you take $250,000 out of what would remain as state highway funds and allocate those to the county special allotment. And then for the city special allotments, you take $500,000 out of the city allotment and $500,000 out of the state, and that becomes the special city allotment, which goes to small cities. These amounts are doubled in the amendment to $500,000. In case of what comes out of the state share for counties to from $500,000 to $1 million in terms of what comes out of the state share for cities. Then in Section 19, you have additional registration fees that you asked about, which allow counties that have had more than 10% of the aggregate population growth of the state since 1980, you require them to impose a $10 vehicle registration fee. And then you're requiring for Multnomah County that those monies be, the priority for those monies be to the Willamette Valley River Bridges.
And the high growth $10 is retained by the county?
Correct. Okay, the -16 amendments then, we kind of go through the bill as we look at this. What I've tried to do is put into the bill the recommendations that come out of the 1999 Highway Cost Allocation Study. So in Section 3 on page 2, you have a road use assessment fee This is for a single-trip permit for non-divisible loads. So where you have big I-beams or something that are being moved down the highways, cannot be broken into smaller loads. They're assessed a fee, which currently is 5.2 cents per diesel, per single axle equivalent load. And so what you're doing is basing that fee both on the mileage that the vehicles travel and on the axle weight, which are a measure of the damage they're doing to the highways. That is replaced. Contractors recommended using a table, essentially, which would allow the rate to vary with weight and with the number of axles that are involved. The first correction I'd like to make, the way this table is intended, the table that they're currently using, ODOT takes the 5.2 cents, which is in current law, and creates a table much like this anyway. The table runs out to 20 axles and currently goes up to 240,000 pounds. So it's a big table, and they've been asked to extend that actually up to 400,000 pounds. So it gets to be a big table. So what we've done is put in sort of an example of how these things vary, and that comes out of the highway cost allocation, the formulas which are used essentially to establish those rates. And then on the second part, 3 on line 26 of page 2 says, for vehicles that don't fit in the table, ODOT will establish by rule the millage rate there that would be applied for those miles of travel.
Mr. Chair, question?
Attorney Merkley?
On that first table that's labeled axle weight mileage tax rate table, how do the miles come into to play on that? Is that fee multiplied times the number of miles, or how do miles come to bear on that table?
Well, it's not immediately obvious, is it? And as I look back at the language, it's not clear how the 5 2/10 cents applies to. But well, no, a single axle load mile traveled.
Right.
That's clear. And that's the intent of this, is that it operates just like the weight mile taxes, in the sense that this is a mileage fee, and I guess the table does say that, an axle weight mileage tax rate, so that this fee is applied to every mile that you travel.
Okay. So I wanted to make sure we're still retaining the notion that the fee changed according to miles traveled.
Yes. Okay. I think that could be made more explicit, but that certainly is the intent. Comment there on page 1, where the last column is 9 or more. They copied that out of the weight mile taxes. That would just be 9 now, because then for 10 up to 20 or 30 or however many axles you might have, the department would be establishing rates. Again, now we're substituting on page 3 of the amendments for the blanks which appear on page 4 of the bill, the actual weight mile tax rate. Again, in current law, you have two separate tables, the table A for weights from 26,000 to 80,000 pounds, which does not vary by axle, and then a rate or a table for weights from 80 to 105,500, which does depend on the number of axles. The bill, as it came out of House Transportation, collapses these two tables into one. And so what you see in the amendments then is one table for weights from 26,000 all the way to 105,500, all of which depend on the number of axles. And this is the table, the rates, which came out of the highway cost allocation study, and which would be required to have the heavy vehicles meet their heavy vehicle share of 36.2%. Now, we keep getting small adjustments from the contractor, the study is not complete and totally finalized. So these rates actually vary a little bit in some of my later analysis. But they're very close to what would come out if you basically wanted to pass the bill as it is in 2082A.
Okay.
With a 4-cent increase.
Okay, that's the question I was going to answer. This is based on the bill as currently written, so this equivalent truck tax is basically 4 cents, yet in gas tax. And what is the model under which you make the assumptions, which Eddie would cost responsibility analysis?
Well, it's sort of a blend of what came out of the highway cost allocation study and what I've done personally. The highway cost allocation study is not designed at this point to facilitate growth in looking at changes over a number of period of years. It's keyed to 1 year, which is calendar year 2000. So what I have to do is to go in and take these rates and then adjust them essentially for the forecast as it comes out of ODOT with respect to what basic vehicles are going to pay. So I take what the basic vehicles are going to pay and compute what heavy vehicles have to pay to meet their cost responsibility share.
Okay. Mr. Russell, did you want to comment on any of this at this point or look further down the line?
Mr. Chairman, members of the city, for the record, my name is Bob Russell. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Oregon Trucking Association. And we received these amendments late yesterday, but to the extent we were able to evaluate them, there's a couple of things that I would really like to point out to you that's going on here. There's some significant changes. Looking at the -16, which are the most concerned to us, today we have what's called an EASL weight distance tax based on an engineering concept of how much pressure each tire actually puts on the road that applies for these heavyweight vehicles that are operating over 98,000 pounds, and they operate up to, on occasion, 1 million pounds. And they have lots and lots of axles. And that's being changed to a tax table. However, it's only a partial tax table. Basically, on page 2, you're asking the Department of Transportation to set the tax rates. That gives us a little pause. My understanding that the legislature sets the tax rates, this is very unusual in my experience for the legislature to give the agency the authority to set a tax rate. Sometimes fees, but I've never, in my experience, ever seen the legislature grant authority for tax rates. So that concerns me a little bit. When we turn to page 3, there's some significant changes going on in the actual weight mile tax. Let me give you some information.
Bob, just before you go on, let me ask you this. This department setting the fees or the taxes is only above 150,000 pounds and above 9 axles. So we're not talking about very many vehicles.
Mr. Chairman, we are talking about a significant number of trips. The way the formula works today, you set the tax rate based on the EASL, which is an engineering formula. Everybody knows what that is. Now what we're doing is we're putting a tax table in as an example and then asking the Department of Transportation to set the balance. To me, that's a very unusual circumstance. It would certainly be the trucking industry's preference if the legislature set our tax rate.
And Dick, what's the outer limit here? How many total axles, maximum weight, if we were to do that? What would be the
Well, I guess the current table is that ODOT actually uses it to, when they assign the fee that a vehicle is going to pay on the single trip permit, does run out to 20 axles, and it runs down now to 240,000. And ODOT has experienced a number of requests for weights above 240,000, and a motor carrier division has asked essentially John Maris to run that table out to 400,000. So there are vehicles out there, but I guess the comment I'd make here is exactly the same types of calculations are behind the array that appears in the table here, as would be in computing your single axle equivalent load. Rather than dealing with the old CITO data, whatever it is, and the 18,000 pound standard, it uses the more current federal analysis, which has a number of equations involved to allocate costs according to the types of problems you have, cracking, pavement wear, and so on. And those formulas are used to set these rates. ODOT knows what those formulas are and can use those to extend the table out. I think it's impractical to consider putting a table which is 20 columns wide and a couple hundred lines long in this fashion.
Okay, so somebody who is more skilled than I am at using a calculator can take this formula and calculate 18 axles at 200,000.
The contractor has done it for these, and you know, just extending those equations out would fill in however large a table you want.
Bob, would it make you more comfortable if this Department of Transportation rule said, as you know, based on this formula or something like that?
Mr. Chairman, if the formula was in statute as it is today, we would be comfortable. Moving along to the weight distance tax itself, the document that I handed you is for the preliminary weight mile tax rates that the contractor put together, and these have changed significantly, but the only reason that I'm providing this to you is to show you that there's a significant change in the relationship.
Which one are you, what are you referring to?
The page that I just handed you, marked Exhibit 7.
You're anticipating time. Just walk in the room. Okay. Thank you. Okay, we're getting it now.
Okay. This was the second cut when the contractor developed the weight mile tax rates. And if you look clear down at the right-hand column under New Difference, what it's showing is for lightweight vehicles at 26 to 28,000 pounds, you're increasing the tax rates by 2.10 mils. And this is at revenue neutrality. This is not with any increase. And the tax rates continue to increase, as you can see, down to 0.10 at about 66,000 pounds. And then they start to decrease. And at 80,000 pounds, they decrease by 1.25. And over 80,000 pounds, they start to increase again. So essentially what's happening here, and this is the basis for the rate structure that we've got, although the rate structure that we now have is significantly more complicated. What's happening here is the contractor is recommending that under the current weight mile tax, we shift the burden from the interstate trucks, which primarily operate at 80,000 pounds, to the lightweight trucks, and to those trucks that are operating over 80,000 pounds. So it's dramatically changing the curve. It sort of looks like this. Little trucks get hit, big trucks get hit, and then the interstate trucks, the 80,000 pounders, which, as you know, is about 70% of the total trucks, they're getting a reduction. And this is based on the contractor's opinion of what cost allocation is and recognizing that cost allocation is not a science. So what they're recommending that you do is that you shift the burden under the current weight mile tax from interstate trucks to Oregon trucks. So without changing the tax system, you are in effect doing exactly what you were concerned about with the diesel fuel tax.
Mr. Russell, as I recall from the presentation we had down in room 50 from the contractors, they showed us this last column in a different configuration, but I think their conclusion was that as a class, the 80,000 were actually paying more than their share now, and the in-state guys were paying, or the lighter trucks, were paying a little less than their actual cost impact. So wouldn't this, in fact, reflect true cost responsibility?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe there is anything such as true cost responsibility. It's one person's opinion versus another. And essentially, when the Department of Transportation calculated the weight mile tax rates and did cost responsibility, they created a curve of weight mile tax rates that was far different from what's being recommended by the contractor. The rates that you're referring to that they showed you in room 50 are those in the second column from the right, marked 3499. And you can see that at that time the differences were even more dramatic. And they were recommending that the 80,000-pound rate go down by 2.15 cents, while the 26,000-pound rate go up by 2.85 cents. That's a significant shift.
And if you had the ability to dictate what your balance would be, it would be based on what, the current ODOT?
Mr. Chairman, I see little reason to... I see significant economic impact for the trucking industry from adopting the contractor's recommendation to shift the burden from the interstate trucks to the little trucks and the very heavy trucks.
Dick, why is the bill, why does the amendment have the new formula instead of the old formula?
The old formula, essentially, that Bob is referring to, Mr. Russell is referring to, is based essentially on the 1994 update of a major study done in 1992. Analysis being done essentially by ODOT internally. And since that time, there has been a major study done by outside contractors, done by a group, the primary contractor being Cambridge Systematics with Tidec Inc. and R.D. Mingle and Associates. And they've done a major study. And they came to different conclusions. And there were some errors which in the preliminary results which came out, which have to do to a certain extent with the way in which they allocated cost subsidies, but also with some changes that were recommended and some errors that were pointed out essentially by ODOT in their VMT numbers. Having corrected those, they have now what I think are basically their final estimates, and which are the rates which the contractor has arrived at to achieve cost responsibility. And the changes, result from the fact that a lot of assumptions were changed. You had a study review team which was guiding the contractors and making decisions. One of Bob's, one of Mr. Ruffles' complaints is the way in which they allocated the central administrative costs on the basis of allocating it by cost responsibility rather than VMT, which ODOT had done in the past. That made a difference. The way in which they allocated the subsidies for vehicles which are not paying full fees was different. And a lot of assumptions which were made by the study review team dictated how the contractors treated certain types of expenses, and the result is a different analysis. And I think it's a good analysis, and certainly the best that we have at this point. If you want a base rate on cost response estimates of cost responsibility,
okay.
So
So how are we, maybe you can answer this, Bob, how are we as policymakers, not engineers and not ODOT, and not truckers, how are we supposed to decide which calculation is more accurate there?
Mr. Chairman, you know, I would hope that you would look at the impacts of the recommendation. I would hope that you would recognize that cost responsibility is not a science, that the Department of Transportation can do a study, the contractors can do a study, come to different results, and they're both right. They're their best estimate, as Mr. Yates was pointing out. But I would hope that you would look at the impacts on the trucking industry and make your decisions on whether or not you wanted to adopt some of the recommendations of the contractor. You don't have to adopt their curve. It would be a simple matter to take the existing weight mile tax table and adjust it based on the overall changes in cost responsibility and not change or not shift the burden from one class of trucks to another. Mr. Yates can do that. I can do that. There are lots of folks that can do that. That's a choice that I think that you need to consider, because what this is doing is it will significantly impact Oregon firms, be detrimental to Oregon firms, and will benefit those that are operating interstate. And the second point I'd like to make...
Let me just stop right there, if you don't mind, and ask if there are any other questions from any members. Okay, go ahead, Dave.
The second point I'd like to make is in these amendments on page 3, we are taking the actual weight distance tax, which now only applies on trucks that operate over 80,000 pounds. And what that means is we're making the tax rate sensitive to the number of axles. You can see on page 3, when you look across the top, they've got the axle groups by 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 or more. Now, in current law, that distinction only applies to the heaviest trucks that are operating over 80,000 pounds. This tax table takes it down to 26,000 pounds. When we were talking about the complexity of the weight mile tax, we have just added significantly to the complexity of the tax by adding about another 100 tax rates to the system. That's point number one. Point number two is that ODOT recently did a study of the effectiveness of the axle weight distance tax on trucks operating over 80,000 pounds. Now, the results aren't final, but we're real close to having final results. And the idea was, does this axle weight distance tax actually encourage motor carriers to add additional axles under the heavy trucks? And the study concluded was, no, it does not. And the things that determine how we configure our trucks are the size and weight regulations and our customer demand for trucks. They found, and unfortunately or fortunately, I was one of the original authors of the axle weight distance tax and took a certain amount of pride in that. Unfortunately, it hasn't worked. And to extend it down to 26,000 pounds, a system that doesn't work, and only, the only result is to make the weight mile tax more complicated, doesn't make a lot of sense to the trucking industry. And the next point I'd like to make...
Let's stop for a second. Mm-hmm. Anybody have any questions about that issue? Let me ask Dick. Is what Mr. Russell is saying correct, that this particular calculation in previous weight mile tables only referred to vehicles that are 80,000 or higher?
That's correct.
The axles?
That's correct. And you can see that if you refer back, in the original bill, the tables that are being deleted on page 2 and page 3 show the single rates, 26,000 up to 80,000 pounds, and then the rates as a function of axle, number of axles for 80 to 120.
Okay. And where did this particular, was this also out of the most recent cost responsibility report, let me just cite it a minute ago?
I would say, I guess let me back up for a minute. ODOT has proposed this, believing that it would increase a number of sessions. The contractor found some extremely heavy weight vehicles operating at extremely heavy weight in the lower categories there for, you know, a two or three axle vehicle to be operating at 40 or 60,000 pounds is putting a lot of stress on the road. For what reason, I don't know. As the bill came out of House Transportation, they adopted the change. And given that change coming out of House Transportation, I requested that the contractor take these rates, which he did not originally spread, up to 80,000, and spread them over the axle. The result was he did get closer to cost responsibility share for the different types of vehicles in these lower weight classes.
Mr. Chair,
Shane Rickman,
a basic question that I probably should know the answer to, but when we see something such as 84 mils for a two-axle truck, are we talking about the equivalent of 0.084 cents per mile?
8.4 cents
per mile.
The way I look at that is dollars per thousand miles.
Okay. Then I'd like, my follow-up question is, as I look at these two tables, and if one, it seems reasonable to view one, almost the first chart as an extension of the second chart, and under the five-axle column, the one chart ends up at 279 mils in the 96,000 to 98,000 category. The first chart picks up and leaps to 496 mils. I'm trying to understand why, given the same number of axles and just the 2,000-pound change, we have a big leap in the E per mile.
If you look at the sheet that Bob handed out there, essentially in terms of the recommended rates, well, that doesn't show it either. But part of the difference there is about an 18% increase in the tax on basic vehicles, which is in 2082, your 4 cent tax increase plus your $10 registration fee increase. That results in taking the weight mile tax rates that the contractors developed and increasing those by 18%. To give you the ones that that are in the amendment, because these are supposed to be not the current system, but the current system with the 4 cent increase in fuel tax and 10 cent increase in automobile vehicle registration fees. So part of that increase is the change in the tax law. The other would represent just the difference in, you know, the rates determined by the contractor and the rates determined by ODOT in 1994.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a table that Mr. Yates produced back on April 21st. It shows the variation for each axle. It might be helpful in answering that question.
Everything in there. What he's saying is 5.6 is different from 5.6.
I don't think it's 279 to 496.
Yeah.
It is 496.
Oh, I'm sorry. Here's what he's saying, is there's a difference in the same weight, same axles in your two tables.
It seems like a huge leap between these two. And they're both undivisible loads, aren't they?
No, no. This is the undivisible load table. The other applies to the divisible load.
Undivisible.
Yeah. And you're coming down to a different speed.
Yeah. Even if Jeff, why don't you go over to the
Mr. Chair, I was still just trying to clarify that point. I understand the one table is for non-divisible loads, first table, and it's been clarified the second table is for divisible loads, but I'm still a little confused because independent of that distinction, if wouldn't the damage be the same for the same number of axles and the same weight, yet if one checks the extension of the table, you have essentially, as you go from 98,000 pounds to 100,000 pounds, so a 2% increase, you have not quite a doubling of the per mile fee, and that just, I couldn't quite explain the nature of that unless there's an inherent subsidy for the divisible loads built into the tables.
I don't think there is any way to explain that. What I would suggest, you know, what I would do at this point is, you know, I did not notice that, right? What I would do is go back to the contractor and say, hey, you know, these tables don't match up. What's the problem?
Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead, Bob.
Mr. Chairman, the last point that I'd like to make is that we expected the results of the cost allocation study on January 15th. We're still getting the results of the cost allocation study. As you can see from the stuff that Mr. Yates has provided you over the last few weeks, the rates have changed significantly. My understanding is that they were changing up till about 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon. I'm asking, please don't rush. Give us an opportunity to look this stuff over. Representative Mercury made an excellent point. And this is new stuff. This is a new study, and we need some time to digest it before we rush this bill out of committee.
Well, I understand what you're saying. We don't have a lot of time left. We've got to get this and anything else that we're doing out of this committee, especially House Bill, out of here. And
Mr. Chairman, perhaps we could continue to work on it on the Senate side.
We're going to take care of it here. We're going to move it out as best, in the very best policy that we can move it. And if things are changing on a daily basis, at some point we're going to call a halt to the clock and say, this is what's in the bill. And I want to make that the very best policy that we can get out of this committee and not trust the Senate to fix it. So.
Mr. Chairman, you can understand how that makes the trucking industry feel as this stuff is changing.
I do understand that, but I also understand that people have different opinions about pretty much everything that we decide on in any other committee. And at some point, we have to, as lay people, not being professionals, we have to make what we think is the best policy decision based on the best available data. And you're both. Now, everybody's making very good points here, and you're not making our decisions any easier. But we're going to make a policy decision that is going to be based on the information that we have and our best judgment and move forward with that. And we'll try to make it as fair as possible to everybody. But we'll do the best we can.
Henry?
Okay. Page 4 of the amendment, then. A number of types of vehicles are allowed to not pay weight mile taxes, but pay with substitute, or I call them in lieu taxes, and you know, it's platinum. And these are increased. Again, let's see, on page 5, should be. Top of the page in line 2, you have a $5.55 fee for log carriers transporting log poles, pure cores, piling. That is increased, and in given the increase in the basic vehicle tax, again, that would increase to $7.64.
The next one down on line 18, which applies to sand and gravel, I think.
Which page of the bill are you on?
Page 5. The change is in line 18. This is farm vehicles. Let's see. Yeah, I'm suggesting here in these amendments that you delete the special treatment for in-lieu taxes for farm vehicles. The reason being, as near as we can tell, nobody's ever used it. There's never been a farm vehicle that has opted for these in-lieu taxes. That makes it very hard to set the rate. There's no VMT in the model, and so we cannot come up with a rate. And if nobody's using it, I'm simply suggesting that you delete that provision. Or the amendments delete that provision. Then in line 28, vehicles that are engaged in the operation of dump bodies and essentially sand and gravel trucks, the fee is increased from $5.50 to $8.77. And then in the last change is in line 36 for vehicles hauling wood chips. Currently $22.40. That would increase to $40.38. Then two more recommendations following my earlier review of the bill would be that the vehicles less than 8,000 pounds not pay less than automobiles. Now, the bill raises the automobile to $40 biannually, or essentially $20 a year. So I'm suggesting that you might want to consider in line 25 on page 7 changing that fee for, I think this is commercial buses and I think this is charitable. Well, it's special vehicles here anyway. Less than 8,000 pounds, the current fee is $15. I'm suggesting you raise that, or the amendments would raise that to 20. And again, on page 10, dealing with farm vehicles, again, the vehicles less than 8,000, the current fee is 15. The amendments would increase that to 20. Now, the Dash 17 amendments are basically a change which would increase the fuel tax by 6 cents rather than 4 cents beginning January 1, 2000.
Yeah, where does the A-17 come from?
I believe they came to me from council, and I believe they came through Gary Conklin. On page 1 of the bill, line 16, instead of an increase to 20 from 24 to 28 cents, it would increase that to 30 cents. And on the following page, line 8, same thing for the used fuel tax, the tax on diesel, primarily from 24 cents to 30 cents. The weight mile tax has been here are extended like they are in the A and gross version from 26 to 105,500 and allowed to vary by axles, but they can collapse into 4,000 pound intervals rather than the 2,000, which is current and which is in the A and gross bill. Then on page 6, on page 4, we're deleting lines 1 through 43. Okay, that's the weight mile tax table. Page 6, delete lines 22 through 31, and this is the way in which the revenues, the new revenues, are currently distributed under the A and Gross bill. We went through that the other day. Current revenues, or the revenues that would be generated without the increase in the tax rate, continue to be distributed essentially 60% to the state, 24% to the counties, and 16% to the cities. The new revenues, however, in the bill go 32.5% to the state, 44% to the counties, and 23.5% to the city. This has changed in this distribution, or in this Dash 17 amendment. First, you're decreasing the amount of the new money available for distribution by $3 million. And this, if you remember the Dash 15 amendment, this goes essentially to the Eastern Oregon Federal Forest Safety Net, or for those Eastern Oregon counties who've had decreases in their federal timber taxes. And then in B in line 20, $1 million is also taken off the top, which becomes an increase in the city allotment. So instead of $1 million, which currently goes in, the way I read this, it would increase it to $2 million. And we're dealing there with, in line 15 through 21, we're dealing with half the increase. You've got a 6 cent increase in the bill, and it says an amount equivalent to one half.
But a 4 cent increase in the bill, isn't it?
We are now looking at the Dash 17 amendment. And this takes it, rather than to 27 to 30 cents, what would be a 6 cent increase.
Okay. Okay, so this is based on 6, so
okay.
We can't adopt both of these.
No.
Want
to go for 10?
No. Just look here a second. Is this table the same table that we just were talking about deleting last time?
No. What you have here, and this is a replacement of the weight mile tax, which is not the non-divisible, but the divisible load.
Okay.
And the only difference here would be that the brackets are collapsed from 2 to 4,000. So instead of running 26 to 28, first bracket runs 26 to 30. You got half as many brackets.
Okay.
I'm asking why. I don't
know. Another way of doing it.
Where did this come from?
It came to me from council, and I believe it comes through Gary Conklin.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I think maybe I know something.
Excuse me.
Okay.
Do I go through these? Or?
Yeah, let's keep going.
Okay, you're starting with a 6 cent increase, and in line 15 to 20 on page 2, you're dealing with half of that. So essentially, you're taking 3 cents of the 6 cent increase. And the equivalent increases in the taxes on heavy vehicles, so the equivalent weight mile and road use assessment.
Based on which... I hate to ask, which formula, the new study or the old one?
Whatever.
The ODOT method or?
They're blank in the table.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Question for Jake. So with the blanks there, we can't, we're not determining at this point in time what the 6 cents fuel tax would impose on the truck weight. Not determined. But we haven't determined what the increase of the 6 cent fuel tax would be to the trucking industry.
I have, in a separate analysis, done that, and we can go through that.
Is that what this is?
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's keep going through this amendment then, 17.
So you've got the 3 cents going out And off of that 3 cents plus equivalent weight mile, you take off 3 million for Eastern Oregon counties that have experienced decrease in federal forest fees.
Right.
Take off 1 million for increased allocation to the special city allotment fund. The remainder of that 3 cents then is the state gets none of it. 60% for the counties and 40% for the city. Then you've got one-third in sub 3 on line 24, you're taking one-third of the 6 cent increase, or 2 cents, and you're dedicating that to bonding, essentially, and it's all for the state. And the provisions set up for the bonding are in Section 21. We'll get to those in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
In sub 4, then, you're taking the last penny, one-sixth of the 6 cent increase, and dedicating that to local bonding and dividing it 60% counties, 40% city. Then the last thing, the top of page 3, sub 5, is what do you do with the registration fees? And this continues to distribute them on the current formula, which is 60.05% stays with the state, 24.38% to the counties, 15.57% to the city. Now, Section 7A, beginning line 5, page 3, says, okay, that distribution we just went through is only good for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so starting then with the calendar year 2002, you would change that distribution, again, coming down to 2, sub 2 in line 11, we're talking about the 3 cent increase. And again, you still take the amounts off the top there, 3 million for Eastern Oregon, 1 million for cities. And then on line 18 and C, the distribution has changed so the state gets to keep 50%, 30% goes to the counties, and 20% to the city. So for the first 2 years, everything that's left of that 3 cents after the two deductions, the 3 million and the 1 million, goes all to the local government. Then after that, beginning in 2002, it's shared on a 50-30-20 basis. Okay? And then on line 20, you're getting back to the state bonding, no change. In sub 4 on line 24, the 1 cent devoted to local bonding, no change. And then in 5, which deals with the registration fees, you're going back to a 50-30-20 split. Section 7C, then, on page 4, says that the amount that's dedicated to local governments here shall be used only for road and bridge maintenance and preservation. Then in Section 15, we're inserting that back on page 14, and again, this is like the Dash 15 amendments, and setting up the money that's allocated to those Eastern Oregon counties. Then Section 16 in 23 is modifying the distribution to the special allotment for cities, increasing that to the 1 million, and that's the 1 million that we were taking off the top earlier out of the 3 cents. So that's a 1 million increase. The total going to the cities would then be 2 million. Section 17 brings in the other counties. Again, same provision here. The county has experienced more than 10% of the aggregate population growth of the state since 1980. They are required to impose a $10 vehicle registration fee. The money does go to the counties, and the same provision with respect to Multnomah County that it must give priority to the Willamette River bridges. Again, some restrictions there on page 8 with respect to use of the money. Let's Then we get back to section 21 on page 7, and that deals, you have a blank there on line 5, deals with the amount of money essentially that can be bonded and the uses of those funds. Section 22 is the same with respect to the city bonding. In addition, on page 8, we have in section 24 two discounts that are allowed heavy vehicles reporting under the Weight and Miles Act. If they equip a majority of the fleet with transponders, which communicate information on essentially the load that they're carrying and where they are, which is useful both for safety purposes but also for assessing the Weight and Miles Act. They're entitled to a 2% reduction in the amount of the weight mile taxes that they would owe. And then in sub 2, you have an additional 1% deduction if they report and file electronically.
Okay. Okay, I want members to know that this is almost where we're going to end up. We've got actually one more little iteration to come forward, and on the gas tax portion of this, I'm not referring to the weight mile portion of this because I think that still remains an issue under discussion about which particular formula we're going to use. But as far as the general concepts that Dick outlined for the gas tax, that's the direction that we're planning to go, and it's it involves a bonding package for specific projects. It involves money to cities and counties for maintenance and preservation, and then it involves the reverting to the normal split for ODOT cities and counties thereafter, with approximately 2 cents of that total 6 cents going to the debt service on the bonds for the projects. Any questions?
Good chair.
President Rosenbaum.
Question, Dick, about section 24. Are those incentives a new concept? And I know we had some testimony about technological improvements that were out there that could make administration of weight miles more efficient. Is that the idea here, to encourage that and reduce some of the administrative costs?
Yes. Yes, it is. Those were first, to my knowledge, first imposed in the bill as it failed last session. All right, they were in this bill, I think, before it came out of House Transportation. All right, yeah, and I'm not sure why they were deleted.
But to follow up, Mr. Chair, sure. I guess I was asking. Right now, we don't have any incentives like that in the law.
That's correct.
Other questions? Dick, do you want to go over this revenue forecast?
Yeah.
Sure.
What I have here, if you should have among the materials, is a whole lot of numbers.
Dick?
Yeah, I'm here.
You brought us numbers?
And what I've tried to do here is to sort of lay out the way in which I'm analyzing these proposals and go through two examples. One is the House Bill 2082A in gross, and the second follows the Dash 17 amendments as closely as I could. I didn't see those until last night, actually. But,
thank you. Mr. Conklin always wants us in the dark.
So if we start on page 1, what we have is current law. And essentially this is the March forecast as generated by ODOT, by Mark Malik. And of interest here in particular, it is divided between basic and heavy vehicles, so you can sort of see what's being raised. Now, there's no tax rate increases in here. This is current law. And a particular interest is the second from the last line there, percent of total. Now, what this measures is the taxes paid by heavy vehicles as a share of total taxes paid. Now, you note that if you do nothing as a legislature with respect to the highway taxes, the existing weight mile tax rates continue, the existing fuel taxes continue, and here's what happens to the heavy vehicle share. Because heavy vehicle BMT is growing more rapidly than basic vehicle BMT, they will be paying a larger and larger share of the total, so that it increases from 37.9 up to 39.4%. Now, the contractor gave us recommended weight mile tax rates, a recommended table for the non-divisible load trip permits on the road use assessment fee, and for the flat fee. And so what I need to do is to get to what the revenues would be if those schedules were in effect. Okay, with no other changes, no increase in the gas tax, but the revenues that would be generated from the heavy vehicle class if we adjusted the weight mile tax rate and so on to the contractor's recommended rate. And the way that I've done that is essentially to take the basic vehicle amounts that they're paying out of the current law table and adjust those to what is the heavy vehicle share as determined by the highway cost allocation study. So that's first fully effective in the year 2001, and that's 36.2%. Bob was talking about receiving things yesterday at 2 o'clock. That went up 0.1% at 2 o'clock yesterday. Okay, so the stuff that you've seen before is 36.1. At least the changes are getting small. So that's an important figure. Anyway, given that percentage, then I calculate the number right above it, which is the total amount that comes from heavy vehicles. So in 2001, I have to raise $243,935,892 for heavy vehicles to meet their 36.2 cost responsibility share. Then I know what the I've adjusted the registration fees here for the contractor's recommended rates. Now, they recommended that you adjust the rates for vehicles between 8,000 and 26,000 pounds. Went through those recommendations the other day. If you change those, it would change the amount of registration fees paid by those vehicles, and I've adjusted these amounts here to reflect that change. The fuel taxes would be the same. So I subtract out the adjusted registration fees, the fuel tax, and essentially the same road use assessment fee. I've got a lot of confusion in terms of how to compute that fee, given all these different... yes. So I've used the same numbers there. And what's left over is what must be raised by the weight mile tax, and that's the number that generates the tables that you're going to see, the weight mile tax rates that you'll see for each of these proposals. Okay, what happens then? You see the two proposals. The first proposal, number one, is for the...
Don't even talk about number one.
Okay. Skip down to proposal number two, which is 6 cents plus a $10 basic registration fee increase, all beginning January 1 of 2000. On basic vehicles, then, you can see what happens, and it's my fault I don't have the last few years. Mazin sent them over last night, and I missed them. I didn't see them in my email. So I just have the earlier numbers through 2003. But you can see what's happening on the basic vehicles. You've got a $36 million increase over the that they would pay for $99,200. That's the year for which these are only in effect for 5 or 6 months. So moving then to 2001, you get $110 million increase over the $430 million that would be raised by current law. And also, because the fuel tax has increased, both gasoline and diesel, the heavy vehicles also pay some of that. And those are the amounts that they would be paying. The registration fee is just for my purposes, the percent, for percent registration. So then in the bottom part of the table, and what we really want are the adjusted current law numbers, is how these monies would be distributed under current law. So you've got, let's take 2001. You've got $403.8 million, which would go to the state. The county would get $164 million, with $750 going to the special allotment. Cities would get $105 million, with $1 million going to the special allotment. And I'm sorry that those numbers blanked out. I didn't notice that in the two columns. Reason being that Windows 95 keeps changing the format, you can see there's sense in those numbers, so it was too big to print. Okay. The next page then is the contractor's rate for these taxes. In other words, the current law. These would coincide with the adjusted current law. These rates would raise the amounts that are in here under the adjusted current law. And the heavy vehicle share would be 36.8. So you've got the road use assessment fees, and you've got the weight mile tax rates and the flat fees. Then skipping the next page, which the next two pages, which have to do with the proposal one, and skipping over to the unnumbered page, which is headed House Bill 2082A-17. So this is intended to coincide with the -17 amendment. Notes at the top, the fuel tax increases 6 cents beginning 1-1-2000, registration fees $10 on automobiles, 1-1-2000, and then the question is the distribution of new monies, 3 cents plus equivalent, you take out $3 million for Eastern Oregon, $1 million for the special city allotment, and for calendar years 2000-2001, this goes back all to local government, 60% to counties, 40% to cities. After that, it's divided 50-30-20. 2 cents plus equivalent goes to the state for bonding. 1 cent plus equivalent goes to local governments. It's split 60% counties, 40% cities. The registration fees, again, for the first two calendar years go back onto the current distribution formula. Calendar year 2000 and after, it's a 50-30-20 split. Okay, what you get then for the first 3 years here, again, is the revenue increases. That this proposal would bring about. You've got the current law, basic vehicles paying 400, well, let's deal with 2000-2001, second column. Basic vehicle paying $430 million with an increase of $110 million. Again, the heavy vehicles at 36.2 for the current distribution, having to pick up $244 million. Then the new distribution is adjusted. You'll notice there that the distribution percent is 31.2. And what I've done, I don't think you want to go through these calculations, but what I've done is that if you look at the heavy vehicle share for just the money that's spent by local governments versus the heavy vehicle share for money that's spent by the state government, they're different. So now I've blended these two and gotten an average, which is weighted, by the change in the distribution in the bill. So as a result of that, it falls from 36.2. The new money, the heavy vehicle share for the new money is 31.2. So that means they have to raise essentially another $50 million, $49.8 million. So the total from the heavy vehicle class then is $293.7 million. The fuel tax raises $23, the registration fees $21. And the balance to be raised by the weight mile tax and the road use assessment fee is essentially $250 million. Now that's an increase of 22.1% over those adjusted numbers that you saw on the first page. So we essentially have to increase the weight mile tax rates and the road use assessment fees and the flat fees by 22%. Meet the cost responsibility share. What I did is that the number in bold there, the fee schedule adjustment factor of 122.6 is an average for the 2001 and the 2001-2002 biennium. And that factor then drives the tax rate tables on the next page, so that the weight mile tax rate, the road use assessment fees, and the flat fees are increased by that 22.6% from the fees recommended by the contractor on page 2. And you can see what that does to the distribution, where it goes. You've got the current law of monies going out to the cities, counties, and the new money going out, the $10 registration fee, and then you get the total before bonding. And what you have conceptually here is money that's available for preservation and maintenance that can be spent now. And then you've got money which during these years is sort of set aside for bonding, and that, you know, is gone essentially for whatever period you're going to bond these for. So it's not available to be spent because it's dedicated to bonding. So I'm sort of looking at that total before the bonding and comparing that with what they have now. So if you compare it with the current law total, that doesn't really mean too much, except maybe ODOT. But if you take the total before bonding and you compare that with the adjusted current law, you can see that in the first year, you're a little bit below one, but in the other years there, you're a little bit above one for the state. So the state is actually getting a little bit more money than it would without the 6-cent gas tax and without the registration fees. Cities and counties are getting quite a bit, well, getting more anyway, in the order of 10 to 20% more. Then you come down to the last section here, bonding. I don't know what period you're thinking about. I chose 15 years. We can vary 20 years. We can vary that. You'll get more money up front for the 20-year period, certainly, than a 15-year. I asked Treasury what the rate should be. They said it's anywhere from 5 to 5.25. And I asked them what the issue costs were, and they said 1 to 2%. So I took the conservative figures here, 5.25% rate of interest and 2% issuance costs. Assume now, if you go back up to bonding, the 2 cents is getting the state $15 million, then $47 million, $48, $50, and that's going to grow over time. So I said, okay, let's assume $50 million a year. So if that's available, what that gets you is $526 million that you'd have for modernization programs in the current bill. This bill also has bonding for state and local governments, and so you have comparable numbers for them. Okay. That's it.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman, Dick, is it correct to conclude then that the bonding for local bonding would be about $260 million?
The sum of those two, yes. Could be half of the 526 because all the assumptions are the same and they're getting 1 cent and state's getting two.
Okay. Like I said, we're going to have a little bit more tweaking on this and so I don't want to spend a whole lot more time on this particular bill, but I would like, before we have to go to the floor, for you to start going through the amendments, the proposed amendments on 3344.
Okay.
So, appreciate the report on this. Close the work session on House Bill 382. Open the work session on House Bill 3344. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
We're not going to get through all these, but there are...
One of these days, we're going to go through the numbers I gave you last time.
Okay. Are we going to 3345, or...?
No, 3345 is still being disputed in the various parties.
Okay, that's cool.
So, we'll get back to that one.
Beautiful.
Let's go as far as we can on these amendments.
Okay, so let me on the hold. There it is. thought I didn't have the bill. Make it hard to go through the amendment.
Okay, A-8. What you have here is sort of amendments which come out of my review and a review by ODOT. The purpose of ODOT's review to make the bill easier and perhaps less expensive and to administer. And the high amendments, of course, express certain concerns, which I already went through with the bill. On page 8, we're going to go back and forth here a little bit. I can't start at the beginning and work to the end of the bill. But on page 8, line 34, you have a maximum bonding for potentially suppliers, persons licensed as a fuel supplier, of $100,000. Now, this issue was dealt with in House Bill 2190, if you recall, and that was raised to $1 million. And that's the intent here. And in addition to just raising that to $1 million, they put in a new sub 4, which says that a licensee required under this section to obtain a bond may, by proper petition, demand a hearing on the necessity of such bond or on the reasonableness amount. And there's similar provisions. Top of page 12, this is dealing with whose records the department may examine. And it specifies here diesel fuel licensees, dealers, brokers, service stations, and other persons engaged in. And then it says storing, selling, and distributing. The department wants to add transporting in there. I think they have some new experience with Washington dealing with fuel brokers, and I think that's where this enters in. And they need that ability to look at their records.
If they have questions as we go through this, feel free to interrupt.
Page 12, again, the A-10 amendments. This section 20 is confusing to me and also to ODOT in the sense that it specifies reporting by suppliers, it specifies reporting by dealers, fuel users, and then says in sub 3 on line 20, line 33, the department shall establish the reporting frequency for each licensee at the time the diesel fuel license is issued. I don't know whether that applies to the same people in subsections 1 and 2, or to everybody else, or does it give the department authority to override the criteria specified in 1 and 2? So what we did is to change that to say that it applies to all other people besides those specified in subsection 1 and 2. On page 14, you have a penalty provision in lines 22 through 26. Probably out of an earlier draft when the payment date was not the end of the month, but something like the 22nd of the month, you imposed a 1% tax if they didn't get it by the end of the month, and then a 10% tax if it fell into the next month. Well, those are both the same time now. So you would be imposing those two penalties simultaneously, and the amendment simply says that you'll impose a 10% tax if it's not paid by the due date, which is in the bill at the end of the month. The dash 12 amendments are dealing with refund provisions in section 36 on page 18 and 19. What's going on here essentially is that certain provisions are laid out in subsection 1, and the amendments, well, let's take them one at a time here. On page 18 in line 23, the amendment says that you get this refund if you're not presenting a refund claim under subsection 2 of this section. This makes sense,
Where's subsection 2? Subsection 2 is on page 19. Subsection 2 is up here somewhere. Says the department shall allow refund in the following conditions.
Well, that's the second part of the amendment, which is on page 19, line 14. You're inserting again who does not apply for a refund under subsection 1 of this section. And then in line 34, you're saying you're adding subsection 2 in there, the application for a refund under subsection 1 and subsection 2 of this section shall be filed. Doing the same thing in line 37 and the same thing again on line 1, following page.
Well, what is this section 36, what is it in general referring to? It looks like it's cars. Or...
Well, this is people who paid the diesel fuel tax but have not used or burned the fuel on the road. So they're entitled to a refund.
Okay.
And what it's trying to do is eliminate any duplication so that you don't get it under two different provisions. So if you get it under one provision, you can't get it under another.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Williams? Dick, is this a staff-offered amendment? I mean, is this amendment was drafted by staff? Or?
This was drafted out of council. I'm not sure what you mean, but it's directed at ODOT's direction.
Okay. I think
through me,
what he said, all of you were in going through the bill with ODOT.
I'm probably up in the hall for this, so thank you.
Now, the 13 and 18 amendments, I ask you to look at those two together. There are problems, any way you look at it, there are problems on page 48 with the adjustment mechanism, which the OTA is, which comes in the bill. The first one that that ODOT identified is that they can't meet the April and October deadline. The adjustment mechanism says, okay, you do a forecast every 6 months, you compare actual revenues with forecast revenues, and if they differ by more than 5%, you adjust the diesel fuel tax by 2.5 cents. Then at 25, but we go to 27.5 or 23.5, depending upon whether you're getting more or less revenue than expected. ODOT says that, you know, they look at the first 6 months, June through January through June, and actually the reports are coming in until August on what actuals are for that period, and they don't have enough time to set the rate by October 1. So they need to back it up essentially 1 month so that they would set the rate by November or May, whichever is appropriate. The second one is punt. Essentially, and adopt a new provision there for the adjustment in lieu of Section 81. And what that says is that the Department of Transportation shall make this forecast, and then that you're going to compare not only diesel fuel taxes but also registration fees as to whether or not they met the heavy vehicle cost responsibility share for that period, and if they didn't, either because they were too high or too low, the governor has to make a recommendation to the next legislative session as to what would be the appropriate adjustment in the registration fees and fuel tax rate to achieve the heavy vehicle cost responsibility share. So those are not two you can add. You've got to choose one or neither.
Okay.
14, add the new section 29A, B, and C on page 17 of the bill. Now, this might look very familiar to you. It's exactly the same provisions in 2190 that allows ODOT to essentially pull those collection of delinquent accounts in and handle them themselves rather than contracting out to the Department of Revenue for collection of delinquent fuel taxes.
Okay, we already passed.
Yeah. The dash 15 amendments then refer to page 18. This, again, I mentioned as I went through the tax expenditure report, which you're all familiar with. On page 259, the evaluation of the provision G at the top of page 19 is this expenditure is ineffective and the value is zero, is ineffective in achieving its purpose as the cost of construction or maintenance of county roads would be higher than the weight mile tax. Furthermore, virtually no one knows about this provision. The Public Works Department of counties with major timber operations, the Forest Service, and the Timber Industry Representatives were contacted. There was only one case identified where this provision had been exercised in approximately 30, and that was approximately 30 years ago. So I'm just saying delete it. That's
good. Delete another tax credit.
ODOT didn't do that. The next one is, how to say the next one is from ODOT, but the next one is from me, and it, what it says is, we have, and it's worked very well, access to Department of Revenue records. And it allows us to serve you better, I think. And what they're tying up, essentially, I don't want to have to, I'm not interested in going out to a place of business and looking at their records, but where reports are submitted to the Department of Transportation, they're still holding those as confidential. And I think, you know, under the conditions that are specified here, the Legislative Revenue Office should have access.
Let's take a pause here. We'll come back to this. Next time we meet, we've got to go to the floor. Thanks, Dick, for adjourning.